The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. They say it's a thin line between love and hate, but we're working every day to thicken that line, or at least make it a double or triple line. Now, here's your line-jumping host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the show. We call it the Eric Metaxas Show. I just happen to be named Eric Metaxas. It's not intentional. I want to say that... We also call this the show about everything because I like to talk about everything. I have wide interests, and I want to bring my faith and my biblical worldview into every part of what I like to call reality. And one of those areas that I don't talk about a lot because I'm largely ignorant in the economic and financial sphere would be economics and finance. However, I have today as my guest somebody who's been on this program a number of times in the past. David Bahnsen is the founder, managing partner, and chief investment officer of the Bahnsen Group. David, am I pronouncing Bahnsen correctly?
Like Johnson with a B, but spelled differently.
So it is correct. Yeah. Bahnsen, the Bahnsen Group, a bi-coastal private wealth management firm with offices in Newport Beach, California, New York, managing over $4 billion in client assets. Dave is consistently named as one of the top financial advisors in America. Yeah, we're in America right now, by Barron's, Forbes, and the Financial Times. Frequent guest on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business, regular contributor to National Review and Forbes. And we are thrilled to have you back, David Bahnsen. Thanks for being in.
It is great to be back. You know, I was introduced on Fox once as David Bahnsen of the Bahnsen Group. And I thought that was a brilliant hedge.
Actually, that is very funny.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's a brilliant hedge. Okay, you have a book out that came out about a year ago called There's No Free Lunch. That's a famous saying, there's no free lunch. And like a lot of those famous sayings, it's famous because it's true. The idea is you can't get something for nothing. Be careful. If somebody says, I'm going to give you something for free, ask yourself, why are they doing that? So you've written a book called There's No Free Lunch, 250 Economic Truths. And you have just recently, very recently, launched a video series in which you talk to all kinds of people, including Senator Ted Cruz, about this issue of, you know, free market capitalism, why that's good. And so let me ask you the first, the simplest question of all. We've seen in recent years a resurgence of people talking about socialism as acceptable, as a good idea. I know that it is a very, very, very bad idea. But maybe my first question then is, why do you suppose that in a country like this that ought to know better, we have so many people suddenly open to the idea that free market capitalism is bad for the poor, bad for everybody, and socialism is good? Where does that preposterous idea come from? And feel free to drink some water.
I think that it's the reason I wrote the book, that that idea comes from a lack of first principles and first things underlying our defense of free markets. Now, one thing I will say, I try not to use the word capitalism much. And a lot of times people use a word and we know why they use it. This is one I'm trying to push back on a little. Like, I understand the left hijacked the word liberal. I prefer we keep that word. I want to a liberal society, meaning a free society. I don't like that they stole that word. But capitalism was never our word. It was Marx's word for the ideology of Adam Smith.
Okay, pause. That is something I never heard before. It was Karl Marx who coined the term as a pejorative.
Absolutely a pejorative.
Capitalism, the capitalists are the one who hold the capital and crush the workers. They are bad. We are noble.
It was an implied class envy term and certainly a class struggle pitting those who own capital against humanity, where my entire belief about free enterprise, my entire enthusiasm for what free markets have done to advance the cause of a more advanced civilization, a better society, higher quality of life, is rooted in the human person. So what we do when we use the word capitalism is I think sometimes sort of concede a point that what I believe capital is an important tool. Let's call it a means, but it's not the end. Capital accumulation is a means to an end, and the end is this cause of a human flourishing, a shalom, a better life. I'm all for all of those things. The term capitalism is a bit restrictive in my mind.
So what's the term that you use?
Free enterprise.
Okay.
The free society. I love Father Sirico at the Acton Institute refers to the free and virtuous society. That's the struggle we're in right now, is those who believe freedom and virtue are in a tension, which I believe they are, but then I want to hold them in tension. I want to celebrate the tension because I know that you cannot have one without the other. Now, you wrote a book in a similar theme, more tied to the political reality, cultural reality our founding fathers talked about, if you can keep it. But here's the thing. When it comes to markets, when it comes to a defense, a freedom of exchange, people trying to have a more prosperous life, I believe that freedom and virtue are pro-cyclical. Right now, we're running into people on the left and even some now in this quote-unquote new right that believe, no, we have to have less freedom to get more virtue. And of course, there's always been this Ayn Randian camp or more secular camp that says virtue is less important and let's have more freedom. I think it's both and always and forever.
Oh, no, listen, I agree almost violently. And I do, in my book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty, I do mention the economic, the market aspect of this because to me, listen, this is one of the reasons it's a joy to have you on the program here because everyone needs to understand this. This is basic. It's as basic as it gets. Everyone needs to understand that people can elect, everybody voted, and we chose a dictatorial monster. In other words, unless you have virtuous people operating, the kind of free government can quickly eat itself and destroy itself. Similarly with the market, the free market, the idea that the free market will always give us better stuff. No, no, no. If bad people, they just want better pornography and better drugs, the free market will deliver that. You need virtue in the middle of all of this. You need good people. So if you have basically good people, then the free hand of the market will deliver wonderful things. If you have basically good people, you'll deliver wonderful leaders. You'll elect good representatives and stuff. So the idea that we live in a world where we even have to make this case, you'd think that most Americans would already know this, but we don't.
And the reason why is how do people become good people, Eric? This is a fundamental difference. It is theological, but I'll ignore that. It's philosophical. The left believes man is born good and becomes corrupted by bad things. These days it's race and class and gender, where people of my worldview, your worldview, believe that we were born with original sin and moral formation comes from family, church, community. We have to have institutions that help form people morally. So do you get better institutions to create better moral formation with less liberty or more liberty or more liberty? See, this is the problem. If you take away liberty as a way of trying to promote virtue, you're going to undermine virtue because you're not going to keep religious liberty without economic liberty, right?
Well, this is the other thing is that it's all we've had. John Zmirak talks about this all the time on this program. There's no way around it that when you undermine one kind of liberty, eventually it all goes away. And we have to raise a generation of Americans that understands this. Yeah. Because you really cannot have America unless you have most Americans kind of getting this and going along with this. And one of the reasons you're on the program here is because we have had such a hard push in the opposite direction in the last number of years, where people try to demonize the free market as, oh, that's just rich people wanting to get richer and crush the poor. And you and I would say exactly the opposite, that the whole point of it is that we want the rising tide to lift all boats. That's the way it's supposed to work. We can talk about crony capitalism. There's ways that this can go wrong, but it's not the free market. When we come back, we're talking to David Bahnsen. Don't go away. In case you haven't been paying attention, the Biden administration has caused a financial crisis, and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And when we're already seeing record inflation, that's the last thing we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It is real. It is physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to David Bahnsen, B-A-H-N-S-E-N. David Bahnsen has a book out called No Free Lunch and a new video series called No Free Lunch. And you talk to a number of luminaries, Larry Kudlow, our dear friends, Dennis Prager, Father Sirico, Ryan Anderson, and others, Pastor Doug Wilson, about these issues, about the idea that there's no free lunch. And we were just talking about how Americans really need to understand this, because if you don't understand this, you can't really have a culture where you have a free market flourishing and virtue encouraged. That won't happen unless most American citizens buy into this.
Yeah. So there's a quick history that I think has played out in recent times. This wasn't super controversial when Reagan was president. The economy was booming. There was a general enthusiasm for markets. There was a general patriotism in the country. And people say, well, you know, how did Bernie Sanders and AOC become mainstream figures? And it's very easy for me to identify. It was the financial crisis. We predicated our defense of markets for so many years not on the morality of markets, not on the advancement of the human person, not on that markets facilitate their being created in the image of God with dignity to produce things. We defended markets on the basis of they're more efficient. And they are, but then all of a sudden the financial crisis came in and caused people to rethink it. And Bernie is a very capable spokesperson for socialism. He's funny. He has that kind of shtick about him. The media jumped onto him. AOC is young and charismatic and use social media effectively. So it doesn't surprise me at all that what I thought was settled in the 20th century, the failure of totalitarianism, of Marxism, of socialism, that it got a second wind post-crisis. But I blame us. I blame the right for defending markets the wrong way. I think efficiency is a pragmatic byproduct of markets. So they distribute risk and reward. They allocate resources better than alternatives. But fundamentally, I start with the fact that all people, not 53% of people, all people were created by God to produce. That if there'd never been sin, I still think there'd be an iPhone. I still think there'd be a modern transportation system, because God made us to just use our imaginations that are elevated. He created us very good. We're better than the animal kingdom. We're better than the vegetation. We have souls. We can create beauty. We can add our ideas to the raw materials God gave us. That's my starting point for defending markets.
Well, it's interesting. You know, speaking as somebody who I would describe myself as politically conservative, theologically conservative, there's nothing worse than people sort of on your side disagree on some fundamental. In other words, if somebody says, I'm pro-America and I'm pro whatever it is, Trump or GOP, or I'm pro whatever they, but they don't do it in a way that does justice to the heart of why I love America. Yeah. They're kind of like, you know, America is better than the other countries. And, you know, in other words, it would be America. How do I put this? In other words, my idea of why I love America is because America has always been a nation for others, because America has always held up the torch of liberty for everyone. It's an idea. It's a beautiful idea. It's not a America first and only and let everybody else drop dead. On the contrary, if we are great and strong in this country, it will end up blessing those beyond our shores and more people will come to our shores. Exactly the same thing when you're talking about the free market. The free market is not well represented by, you know, people like Gordon Gekko who just say greed is good. No. That's a lie and a distortion. It is a mischaracterization as fundamental as it gets. But those bad ideas bleed into the culture and become part of how folks like Bernie and AOC demonize people who are talking about the free market.
And pretend you're in your 20s over the last decade and now in your young 30s, and your experience as a young adult is going off to college and taking on $300,000 of student debt, getting out of college and getting a job that most of your friends who didn't go to college could also get. When you started, you know, young adult life, your parents were about to lose their home in a housing crisis. Now, 15 years later, you have a good job and you can't afford to buy a home. So from student debt to housing to a lot of these things, it's easy to play into this feeling that the markets aren't working, systems rigged. Now, of course, I can easily walk through a young person in good faith and explain how every one of those things are not markets' faults and are government fault, our intervention in the market fault. But you have to have that conversation. I try to do it winsomely. I want to be one of these people who's persuading folks, not fighting with folks. But you mentioned about our love of America needs to be rooted in idea. And sometimes people getting the right conclusion but with wrong premises is more dangerous. Look, do you want to defend marriage apart from it being a commitment? I don't. Do you want to defend America apart from being this idea about liberty and so forth that we know the unique governed by the people principles of our country? When we defend markets as more people will get richer, we do not do justice to the full orbed reality of markets. Right. A market is just two people in a free exchange. And I always try to reduce things. I do this in the book. I do it in the video series. Two people on a desert island. And really nothing works if it doesn't work with two people on a desert island. And that's to me what we're trying to do. Allocate scarce resources. God made the world a certain way. Markets are the right way for us to freely administer and ultimately cultivate our gifts for the advancement of humanity.
Well, you know, again, it gets down to, we talk about virtue. I saw this, we all saw this happen in the 90s when people who misunderstood this issue, the issue of liberty, the issue of virtue, the issue of markets, whatever, they said, oh, China's opening up, and if they have a free market, that will instantly lead to virtue and to liberty. And you think, well, no, there's this thing called sin and greed, and free markets don't automatically lead. And this is what I guess libertarians and Randians seem to think, that free markets are like a magic thing that leads to everything good. And you realize, no. If you do not have virtue at the heart of it, then that simply won't happen. And we've seen, I mean, I see the naivete in the 90s, on you know what I would call the liberal side, they had naivete about the evil of the Communist Party in China. Very naive. They were naive about the Soviet Union. On the right side, it was naivete about what the markets can do apart from virtue, that they're just automatically going to deliver freedom to China. There's no stopping it. Now, 20 years later, 25 years later, you look at it and you think, how'd that go?
Yeah, and I would argue that anyone who believed economic freedom automatically created political freedom or civic freedom needs to study history better. But see, Milton Friedman, who's sort of the patron saint of defending markets in the 20th century, already told us that economic freedom does not automatically. However, Eric, it is a necessary condition.
Oh, I would certainly agree. Oh, absolutely.
But it is necessary. Yeah. And so all things being equal, I would like totalitarian countries to have economic freedom. And I would like it to parlay into greater political and civic freedom. But the notion that we'll automatically do so is, as you say, naive. Now, within our own country, which is my greater concern, I'm not as concerned about China acting like China as I am America acting like China. And
okay.
Even though it's
very important statement. Yeah. Very important. And unfortunately, we're living in a time when even a few years ago, This was not the issue that it is today. This is very serious, what you just said.
I think that it's more it's a bigger issue of responsibility here because the Chinese people know not what they miss, and America knows darn well what is being taken from it at different moments in time, whether it was the religious liberties taken away during the COVID atrocity or the kind of marginalization of economic freedom that we continue to live through and tolerate. And to those who much is given, much is required. We started in this country with the trifecta of liberty from civic, political, and economic, and to surrender some of it is far more problematic.
Well, again, and this is why we have to talk about this, and this is why I'm thrilled to promote your video series, No Free Lunch, and also the book, No Free Lunch. When we come back, I want to talk to you about some of these economic truths that you highlight in the book, There's No Free Lunch, because I think we do need to remind people of what some of these things are. Again, living in the culture in which we currently live, it's easy to forget these things because you only hear the other side over and over and over again pushing the lies and the mischaracterizations of what the market is and what a free market is. So when we come back, we're talking to David Bahnsen of the Bahnsen Group. Did I pronounce group correctly?
Yeah, that's the easy one.
The Bahnsen Group. No Free Lunch is the video series. We'll be right back.
And these shadows turn from purple into gray. Or just a skyline pigeon dreaming of the open.
Tell me why Relief Factor is so successful at lowering or eliminating pain. I'm often asked that question. Just the other night, I was asked that question. Well, the owners of Relief Factor tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. That's right, designed to heal. And I agree with them. And the doctors who formulated Relief Factor for them selected the four best ingredients. Yes, 100% drug-free ingredients. And each one of them helps your body deal with inflammation. Each of the four ingredients deals with inflammation from a different metabolic pathway. That's the point. So approaching from four different angles may be why so many people find such wonderful relief. If you've got back pain, shoulder, neck, hip, knee, or foot pain from exercise or just getting older, you should order the 3-week quick start discounted to only $19.95 to see if it'll work for you. It has worked for about 70% of the 500,000 people who've tried it and have ordered more. I'm one of them. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out about this offer. Feel the difference. MyPillow is excited to bring you their biggest bedding sale ever. Get the Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98, a set of pillowcases for only $9.98, and rejuvenate your bed with a MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. They also have blankets in a variety of sizes, colors, and styles. They even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more. All the biggest discounts of the year are happening right now, so don't miss out. They're also extending their money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2023, making them the perfect gifts for your friends, your family, and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ERIC or call 1-800-978-3057, and you'll get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including the Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98, and get all your shopping done now while quantities last. Again, use code ERIC and save. MyPillow.com. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to David Bahnsen of the Bahnsen Group. David Bahnsen is also the author of a book, There's No Free Lunch, and a new video series, which we are recommending you check out, called No Free Lunch. Dennis Prager is a guest. Father Sirico is a guest. Ryan Anderson, Pastor Doug Wilson, Larry Kudlow, and of course, David Bahnsen. David, let's talk about that concept when somebody says there's no free lunch. Talk about that.
You know, it was an expression that Milton Friedman didn't actually write a book titled it, but he had written a paper and it was a figure of speech he put into play in the 70s.
I actually never knew like when this was originally coined or came into the culture.
Well, I did a lot of research on that, and our friend Amity Schles interviewed me on C-SPAN. And before that, I know Amity's this great economic historian, and I wanted to know something she didn't know, and I researched the heck out of this. It was the El Paso newspaper in the 1930s had used the expression. There's no free lunch, and then it kind of got a little play in the culture after that, and then Milton Friedman made it more famous. But it is indeed referring to the idea that you can't get something for nothing. But I would add, you can't get something you want without getting rid of something you want, and that this is one of the rare things in life that kids seem to understand better than adults. Kids on a playground know if I trade my bubble gum for a baseball card, I get the card I want, but I'm going to get rid of the bubble gum. And that's sort of the way the trading works. Where adults, particularly in matters of public policy, talk as if we can just do a big social entitlement and there's not a trade-off. Now, maybe the entitlement's the right thing to do. Maybe closing down the economy is the right thing to do. Maybe a particular government expenditure is the right thing to do. But don't act like there's not a trade-off. So that's really—
Be clear about what you are trading. And stop pretending you're trading nothing and there's this free money that we're going to give you.
And why is there such a thing as trade-offs? Because God made the world with scarcity. And that's not a byproduct of sin. Adam and Eve are in the garden. There was not unlimited fruit, right? They had to there was a position of vulnerability. It wasn't sinful, but there was a need to allocate scarce resources even before there was sin. So we've been dealing with this throughout the history of humanity. Mankind, a household, is to figure out how to allocate resources. That's what no free lunch means. That's what markets fundamentally are about. So one of our scarce resources is time. So we determine how much time we're going to put into work endeavors to achieve the means to provide for our families and do different things. There's a series of trade-offs. For myself, I'm a pretty busy guy. I have a successful and busy career. I miss some sports games every now and then for my kids. That's a trade-off versus some other things I'm working on. But then, you know, you find ways to kind of have the life you want to have and honor your family commitments and all that. That's the way the world works until it gets to policy. Then all of a sudden we act like there is a free lunch. And I believe that that's really what we have to do is apply to the micro, our own lives, and the macro, the society, concept.
I mean, I just have to, you know, butt in and say that usually when the government says, we're going to give you something, it is a despicable lie. And I want to be very clear. It's a despicable lie. They are basically saying, you're stupid, and we're going to try to fool you. We're going to bribe you. We're going to give you, we're going to forgive your college debt, or we're going to give you this or that. You'll vote for us, right? And you won't think through what the cost will be. You're just thinking, I'm going to get something for nothing, and you're going to vote for me, and I'll get to stay in power. It's so cynical. It's so anti-American. It's anti-American on several levels, on the contempt that people with that mindset have for voters. It's just so dark to me that they would do that, knowing cynically that if they have the levers of information and media, that they could probably get away with it. But the idea that somebody like Joe Biden would actually think that people are going to go for this. This is how I'll get reelected. And by the way, I know this doesn't work. I mean, we have to believe that many people who are pulling these schemes, they know that there's a price to be paid down the line, and they don't care.
Oh, I think the political class is well aware that there's a price to pay, and I do not think they care at all. The part I'm not sure about is if it's true that the voters themselves understand it. I think oftentimes they don't.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. In other words, I think that you have a cynical politician saying that I know that I can fool enough people. And what a good politician would do would use his bully pulpit to educate people on how things work, to reason with them together to help them make the right choice. But that's not what you see.
That example, the student debt forgiveness, is a particularly egregious one because we're talking about forgiving something. It's already been paid for. And that's the whole thing here is there is a bad guy, and we're lying about who the bad guy is. Are those universities giving the money back? Are those administrators that just hired 750 new diversity officers while they lay off all the faculty that actually are supposedly supposed to be teaching? I mean, the educational product has become a joke, and the finances that are supporting it are outlandish. And with all the talk of debt forgiveness, just basic economics, they got paid and they keep the money. There's no forgiveness. The only thing we're talking about is the intermediary who paid the government, backed by the taxpayers, is now saying that money doesn't have to be paid.
Right. But so, in other words, they're sticking working class, middle class taxpayers with what is in the coffers of places like Harvard and stuff. I mean, it's so cynical on so many levels.
And now this is where some economics and some no free lunch stuff will really help.
Okay. Hang on. Yeah. When we come back. Yeah. We will let David Bahnsen finish that and other sentences. Don't go away. With the overturn of Roe v. Wade, lots of companies are coming out saying they'll pay for employee abortion travel and expenses. Most of you have heard about some of these companies. You've decided to stop shopping or doing business there. But did you know that you most likely own stock in those companies through your 401ks, IRAs, and other investment accounts? Folks, this is a huge problem, and we need to do something about this to send a message to Wall Street through our investments. You need to go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric and get a free Inspire Impact Report. This biblical investment analysis will educate you on what's really in your investment accounts, like companies paying for abortion travel. You need to go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric to connect with an Inspire Advisors financial professional who can run your report and help remove companies paying for abortion travel today. Go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric. That's InspireAdvisors.com/Eric. Advisory services are offered through Inspire Advisors LLC, a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Welcome back. Talking to David Bahnsen of the Bahnsen Group. He has a book out, There's No Free Lunch, and a new video series called No Free Lunch. We're talking about the concept of no free lunch and how we have to re-educate people about the way things work and these lies that you can get something for nothing. But again, it's so cynical to me. It's not respectful of voters and American citizens when someone, you know, behaves like a socialist dictator, you know, like Evita Perón or whoever it is. You know, we'll give you what you want. Just shut up and vote the way we tell you to vote. I mean, you know, that's the way Boss Tweed and Tammany Hall operated. You know, the immigrants would come off the boats and they'd be like, you want a job? Play ball with us. Vote the way we tell you. It's the antithesis of the way America is supposed to work. You see the same thing happening on the southern border. You've got people taking advantage of people coming into the country and saying, we're going to do things the way it was done back home. We're not going to do things the way we're supposed to do them in America. We're not going to educate you to think for yourself and make the right choices. We'll tell you what to do, and we'll give you what we think you need, and you'll shut up.
Yeah, I wish what they were trying to offer in a trade-off was a job. Because I don't think that's
well, it would be graft. It'd be a fake. It's a fake job. You know, it's like a mafia job. You're going to sit there and do what you're told.
I think these days they're actually willing to just flat out say what we're going to trade for you is just unlimited government support without even the pretense of a job. But, you know, here's where these first things and the right premises that we talked about a couple segments ago matter. Why should I, if I were a college student struggling with an excessive amount of debt, not believe it's a good thing for the government to give me the money to pay off the debt? Well, here's the thing. The government doesn't have any money unless it takes it from the private sector. Now, I believe we have to have a government. I happen to believe in a limited government, one that is within its constitutional parameters, and I don't think the government that I'd like to see would cost as much as the government we have. However, there's some legitimate funding and need for government. I agree.
I don't know anybody who would disagree with that.
Yeah, it's get a few fringe, you know, anarchists and things out there, but that's not us, okay? However, I view it as a trade-off. That every dollar we take out of the private sector to go to the necessary funding of government is a dollar we better be able to rationalize, because it's taking a dollar from the productive element of the economy. What do I mean by that? God made us to be producers. We were made with reason. We were made to respond to incentives. We can be creative, productive, and innovative. Where did we get that from? Well, we're made in the image of God. He's creative, productive, innovative. He gave us those characteristics of his. And then when we have money go to the government sector, they lose creativity. They lose incentives. They lose productivity. Now, we need some of that. Let's have a military. Let's have the legitimate functions, a judiciary system, whatever the case may be. But when you start talking about forgiving debt, what you've done is extinguish productive capital. You've extinguished opportunity for someone to start a small business, to respond to incentives, to run a new marketing campaign in their neighborhood, you know, enterprise, whatever the case may be. We take money out of the private sector. It puts downward pressure on growth. This has been happening now for 15 years. We're living at about half of our average of economic growth that we've had for 70 years.
What? I didn't know that.
We averaged 3.1% real GDP growth from World War II until the financial crisis. We've averaged 1.6% since. It's totally unacceptable.
Okay, and now what happened after 2008 that made this?
There's no question. Excessive government indebtedness. It puts downward pressure on productivity because more of the economy is needed to fund government, and the government is less productive than the real economy. Then you add zero interest rates from the Fed. You create incentives for people. I don't want to get too technical, but it doesn't make for smart capital allocation. People aren't going out inventing new things, starting new factories, you know, producing new great businesses when they figure, look, interest rates are so low, I can just leverage up current financial assets and do fine. It's what Japan did. And Japan's been living for 30 years with no or low or slow economic growth. America's entering that period. We used to at least have more babies, but now we're trying to go to Japan's level there as well. We've gone from 2.1 kids per household to 1.6. So we're going to start limiting our population growth. How do you grow an economy with a declining population and declining productivity? You don't.
So in case you're scoring at home, that's why I'm pro-life, among other things, pro-family, among other things. These things are all related. There's no question about it. When we talk about God's vision of flourishing, shalom, all of these things are related.
Absolutely.
And the idea that we can have just this and not that and just this and not that. So people need to understand what real liberty is. We're not talking about anarchy. We're not talking about being libertines. We're talking about a view of liberty that helps everything else flourish. Virtue is at the heart of it. And you can't get away from the markets. That's a big piece of it. But you're saying that in 2008, the government decided just to spend more and more and more money to get us out of.
Well, we had been slowly growing our national debt and government expenditures before 2008.
Right.
But then at the point of 2008, you let a lot of steam out of the engine, right? We delevered so much of the economy because of the big credit crisis, housing crisis. That financial moment blew a lot of things up. And then ever since then, we've been way off trendline growth. That's really where a lot of the populist angst came from. That did create the Trump phenomena, Brexit, other uprisings around the world. The whole whole world is dealing with subpar economic growth. So, well, how come? Well, there's people on the left that want to treat it with Bernie and AOC, and there's people on the right that want to treat it with populism, anger. I want to treat it with liberty and virtue. Okay. I want to treat it with a restoration of market principles that I know work for healthy formation, healthy communities.
Well, that's where we differ. I'm for anger and populism.
Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting because I don't know that those would need to work against each other. In other words, I know the worst of you know, when you talk about anger and populism, but it's interesting to me because I think that how we deal with this and how our leaders perceive this and deal with it.
So can I respond to that?
Please.
I am all for what populists are upset about when they are rooting it in the right thing and handling it the right way.
Right.
All I mean by populism is that it's a tautology. It's embedded in the definition.
Right.
If what they're if we're supposed to change policy because someone's upset, I disagree.
Correct. I agree with that. That's not, we don't change policy for that. All right. We're going to have one more segment, folks. Do not go away. No Free Lunch is the video series. There's No Free Lunch is the book. David Bahnsen, Bahnsen, is my guest. Okay, folks, my guest is David Bahnsen, and he has launched a video series called No Free Lunch with tremendous guests, Larry Kudlow, Dennis Prager, Father Sirico, Ryan Anderson, Pastor Doug Wilson. These are all wonderful people, and you, David Bahnsen, talk to them, and of course, you have this book, There's No Free Lunch. Let's go back to where we just were. You were just talking about what you would propose, in a sense, as answers to where we are right now, policies. What are some of those things when you say, you know, if I could influence our leaders to help fix things?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things I want to do to influence the leaders. I will say, if I could, I'd rather be doing things like writing the book and being on your show and having an influence on what I do with my financial influence on the culture. Starting schools, you know, getting people to understand first principles about economics is going to carry more cultural weight than a congressional race here. And,
right.
You know, the political side to me needs to follow the cultural, but that's a cliche these days. A lot of people believe that. What's it really mean? On the policy front, look, I think a lot of our elected class, people would be stunned if they knew how uninformed they were about basic first principles like we're talking about today. They may go vote all the time the right way about markets, but they don't understand markets. They don't understand the kind of foundation of human liberty and things like that. I don't think we're going to get the policies right till we get the foundations right. But along the way, the easiest thing to start to restore some productivity to the economy is for government to quit spending so much money. And people say, okay, well, then we got to go, you know, shut down government, or we got to fight with the politicians on debt and so forth. You know, one thing the people could quit doing is demanding the government spend so much money. Because you find that 90% of people say government spends too much money, and 7% of people actually have something specific they want government to cut.
Department of Education. Yeah. I would like to start there. I'd like to defund the FBI.
Okay, but put that on
not the
bill.
Not the police.
Though. You want to defund Department of Education.
Yeah.
I don't think there should have ever been a federal Department of Education.
There shouldn't have been.
Now, if we go to our local districts, communities, put it on the ballot, do you believe that the people will vote to get rid of the Department of Education?
No, because they don't understand what we're talking
about. Exactly.
But I think it's interesting because we don't have time really for this conversation, but I feel like Trump understood some of this in a way that other politicians didn't. So he gave me hope in a sense. And now when we see what, you know, the so-called deep state, you realize there's this vast bureaucratic state, you know, whether it's the Uniparty or whatever you want to call it, you just think like, how did we get a government huge, so huge that we don't even think about the Department of Education? We kind of take it as a given. We take it all as a given. And is this the founder's vision? Is this going to lead to, you know, the flourishing we're looking for?
I think that it's inversely related to self-government, to virtue, the thing we started off our show talking about.
Right.
Out of the New Deal, out of the Great Society, we were willing to give the government more power because we were willing to abandon some of our own responsibilities. And since the sexual revolution, what's happened over the last 50 years is so much of our sort of traditional values, our regard for community has been abandoned. And we have invited, because the people wanted a king for Samuel 16:7, we've invited more federal government in place of where we previously had institutions like family, community, church, synagogue, et cetera.
I mean, I think the idea that we are in the crisis in which we find ourselves, not just economic, but cultural on every level, is potentially healthy in the sense that I believe it is waking people up who otherwise would have not been willing to even entertain waking up. They thought, we'll just let it ride. But I think when things get as bad as they are, some people say, okay, wait a minute. Now we need to do something. So that's a longer conversation. David Bahnsen, a joy to have you. Again, folks, No Free Lunch is the video series. We recommend it. No Free Lunch. David Bahnsen, thank you very much.
Always so much fun to be with you, Eric.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.